Designer, author, lecturer, and YouTuber, Pat Sloan truly is the voice of quilting. She has a deep passion for making quilting fun for herself and everyone around her. In 1999, Pat left a career in computers to start a pattern design and publishing company with her husband, Greg. In addition to designing and publishing her work, she began traveling around the country, teaching and showing her quilts to guilds and quilt shops. Over the years, Pat has had her designs published in all the national quilting magazines, has written and published 39 quilt books, and designed fabric lines with Benartex. When Pat took her passion to the internet, she built several quilt communities. Her Facebook group has over 253,000 quilters from around the world, the largest quilting community on Facebook. Now, Pat also comes to you 6 days a week in her daily YouTube videos, sharing sew-alongs, tips, and of course, loads of quilts. Pat Sloan, welcome. I'm so excited to be doing a QSOS interview with you. How are you doing today?
Oh, Frances, thank you, thank you, thank you. This is such an honor to be here. And I just love seeing you again here to be able to chat with you. It's been a while.
It has been. And I'm excited. And I'm very excited to start by talking about this beautiful quilt behind you. Tell me about this quilt. Why did you choose it for your QSOS Quilter Save Our Stories interview? What meaning does it have for you, et cetera, et cetera?
You know, I'm sure everybody says this, so I have to say it too. It's like hard to pick one quilt. I'm sure some people have one, but it's like, I had to think a bit. This is called Times Remembered, which has actually, so you don't forget, it actually has it on the side of the quilt. And Times Remembered is, I think it's an important part of my quilt making because it has sort of a pivotal space for me. When I started learning to quilt, you know, I did a lot of patchwork just like everybody else did patchwork. I live in Northern Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C. That's, you know, kind of the area I am. Everybody did a lot of very traditional work. And I had gotten into a guild and the guild had a large number of appliqueers. You know, they, you know, we would go to guild meeting and everybody would sit and do their little applique like this. And I didn't have anything because I wasn't doing any handwork. And so over time, I wanted to learn, you know, how to applique, but, you know, it took a little while. So eventually my friends, you know, sat me down and showed me how to do some sort of fried eggs, you know, flour, you know, that kind, Frances, is just like a circle there with a dot in the middle. You know, like here, this is not hard. You can do it. The reason why I decided that at that point in time is I wanted to be able to tell stories with my quilts in a different way that I couldn't do with patchwork. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to make images on my quilts. The area that I live in of Northern Virginia, outside Washington, D.C., is quite traditional. And at the time I was learning to quilt, it was very traditional. People just did traditional type of quilt making. And we are just south of Baltimore, Maryland, and Baltimore, Maryland, or where Baltimore album quilts are. And for those of you who don't know what a Baltimore album quilt is, that they are similar to this, but extremely fancy. You know, each block might be 30, you know, inches, and it might have 8,000 pieces. And, you know, 1,000 of those are berries the size of the end of a pencil. You know, they're just these elaborate, beautiful things. And most of us here in my area would eventually take some sort of applique class geared around a Baltimore album. That's kind of what everybody did. I never jumped into those classes. Instead, I sort of did other things. I found folk art, and folk art is a much simpler, much more open, much more large scale applique shapes. And when I started my business, I did start with applique quilts, and I was doing a very folk art applique. But my brain was still out there going, someday my big quilt that I should do would be a Baltimore album. And I have yet to do a Baltimore album, a traditional one. But I remember, okay, if this is going too long, I'll just keep going. But I remember back in like the 90s, late 90s, there was a huge exhibit in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, done by a quilt show there. And it featured Baltimore album quilts. It featured ones that were antiques and ones that were new. So like I can always remember the lady would tell story each block like told a different story. And one was her husband like mowing and the bees were chasing him. It was just fabulous image. And that stuck in my head. So fast forwarding a little bit, as I was, my applique skills had gotten quite good. This is hand applique, this particular one. I'm more known for machine applique, but this in the very beginning, I did mine by hand still. And I decided I would design my own Baltimore album quilt because it was going to be a very long time before I was going to probably sit down and tackle a traditional Baltimore album. And what I did is I went through, I have a lot of books with antique quilts, and I looked through them and found components of Baltimore albums. What were sort of components that happened, like these sort of wreath things? There's lots of that. And then in the middle, there's nine blocks. So, but there's like bouquets. There's lots of bouquets. And so little critters, like this is a cat. And there's the heart and hand up there, there's birds. And I just designed nine blocks that took images, but made them softer, made them less shapes, something I could do. It's also asymmetrical. There's different size blocks and different size sashings. And so for me, when I finally made this quilt, it became really important as my story, as my progression as a quilt maker. And when I traveled and I taught on the road, this quilt has been to probably every single event I've ever done.
Oh my goodness, it's a beautiful quilt. And I guess perhaps because of you're right by the birds and the nest and those yes. eggs. I love those eggs, but what you said about it being asymmetrical too, I just find it a very pleasing quilt to look at. And so I'm so glad you brought this one because it's gorgeous. And it makes me think maybe I could try something like that sometime. No, it's a gorgeous quilt, Pat. And I'm so
thank
glad
you
that. And that's a great story. And speaking of stories, I want to know, when did you make your first quilt? And why? The big why.
Why? Yeah, I probably made my first quilt about 30 years ago. Well, I made my very, very, very first one back in like 1978. It's a bedspread. You know, that was, mm-hmm. you know, I made it once. It was a big, huge star. You know, I tied it, you know, about every 5 feet because I thought that would be enough. You know, it's just a, you know, that was the very first one. But then later, you know, about 25 years ago or so, my coworker and friend, Gwen, told me that I should learn to quilt. And I said, I don't think so. You know, I don't. Going to cut all that stuff up and put it back together again. I did that once. And she goes, oh no, you're going to love it. And so Gwen just signed me up for the, you know, all by hand cardboard templates, learn to quilt class, because that's the only way you could learn to quilt at that point. You know, they didn't teach you, even though sewing machines had been invented, they didn't teach you to sew with a sewing machine in the learn to quilt class. And I started learning because Gwen told me I would like it. And I did.
And okay, so that's interesting. So many people say, oh, I made my first quilt and then I just kept quilting, but there was a period of time. So why did you make your third quilt? So we know you made the second quilt with that class. And from that point on, were you converted?
I was crazy. I was making my second quilt during the first quilt class. Yeah. Yeah, I was head over heels. This was like, I have found my thing. You know, I loved it. I just could not stop. I actually knew, Frances, I knew when I started, and it's like very quickly, I thought, I am going to make a lot of quilts. Mm. I can remember thinking that to myself.
Now, this next question, it's kind of a wild one because it's what have been some of the most important moments for you as a quilt maker, but you have had such a long and varied career as a quilt maker. I'm going to be very interested to hear which moments you pick out.
Yeah, there are so when you've been in business, you know, 22 years and I actually, you know, worked a job and was doing part of this as a part-time job first. So, you know, I think big things were getting like a book, you know, publication and a first fabric line. I think those were, you know, two sort of career building things as a quilt maker, and they're all involved because my quilting is all really what I do for my business. Even though I do it for pleasure as well, But I think one of the other big things that I did was I started an internet radio channel, which most people now would call those a podcast. But at the time that I started, it was so new. People didn't know what a podcast was. Mm-hmm. And it actually was live internet radio, like Sirius or something like that. But it was, there's little radio stations all over the world that run live channels. And so I ran that for about a year and then partnered with American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. And I produced and hosted a weekly radio show podcast for 10 years. And so that was for me, a very big project. It was very fulfilling. I interviewed you, Frances.
Yes. It was a lot of fun.
Yep. And I think another part for me was the sort of serendipitous traveling that happened, because when I started, I didn't expect to be a quilt maker and take it on the road and meet people across the world. That was never part of my plan. I didn't know that would happen. And when I started, people would write me and say, "Would you come and teach?" And then I'm like, "Oh, is that part of this?" I didn't know. It's been wonderful for those, 20 years that I did that, to be able to go to people in their own communities and see small communities, large communities, big groups, tiny groups, just quilters where they live. And it was so fulfilling. I really enjoyed that.
Now, I want to back up a little bit, because there is that moment that you were, I don't know if you were a computer tech person or a programmer you started that career back in the day when that yes. went. People are like, what's a computer?
78. 1978. I was a coder.
That's, yeah. I mean, and so I'm curious how you made that turn from doing that, because you had done that for a while.
Yeah, 20 years.
Yeah. That's quite a big step, going, okay, I've been doing this for 20 years. And right. now, and your husband, Greg, also came, has been along. You were in business together. How did you make that step? What was it like? Was it scary, or did you just feel like this is going to work? Talk a little bit about that transition from being a recreational quilter and a computer person to becoming the early Pat Sloan voice of quilting.
Well, it's good you don't know things sometimes when you do them, because good I couldn't look forward into the future, although maybe I still would have done it. But I always wanted to work for myself, Frances. You could ask my mom, she would tell you, as a little kid, I was developing businesses, with business ideas. So it just took me a while to figure out what that business would be, that I could be interested enough to devote a lot of time and energy. And so, I was about, 40 years old or so when I decided that, my first career I'd done for 20 years and I had wanted to change. I thought, okay, let's do it. I've gotten into the quilting that I knew it. I'd actually done some work for some businesses on the part-time. And so eventually I just decided I need to try it. If I don't try it, I won't know. And so basically I just quit my job and then my husband quit his very soon after. And, it's not easy to start your own business. I don't think I knew enough. If I look back now, I know I didn't know enough, but, it worked out. You learn as you go, you learn very fast. I had things set up, but not, they started rolling then after a while, but, and I wouldn't say probably the most scary part was just making the very decision to do it. Mm-hmm. After it was done, that wasn't scary. Then it was like, holy cow, let's get busy.
And was the first thing that you did publishing a book? Was it, were you teaching? And then
publishing single patterns.
Oh, okay.
And magazine work.
Okay.
And then very soon after, I was asked to teach. And I was like, I didn't know that's what I did, but now I teach too.
And then I would love to talk about the teaching, because again, you are Sounds funny and like a quilting personality, a celebrity, yeah, as we say these days. But really, you know, I think a huge part of what you do is you teach people, you help people. And I love that not just you help people become better quilters, but you also help make quilting fun. So I would love for you to talk a little bit about your life as a teacher, what you love about teaching, what are the challenges of teaching, anything you have to say, because that is such a big part of what you do.
I think, but I really like going out. You know, it was fun for the 20 years to go on the road, you know, to really go out and meet people. The teaching part, I like doing the talks too. You know, the talks is part of the whole thing. You would give a talk, you know, it's kind of like we're doing here, but it'd be all my story. And that was really fun to develop. But I really like going out to show people that quilting is not super serious. You don't have to be, it can be, people make quilts that are super serious, but it doesn't have to be. And you don't have to get so wound up. There isn't, you know, perfection has its place. It doesn't have to be all the time, everywhere, for everything. And you can be relaxed. I did, when I taught, I pretty much always went to different places. So I had just a little repertoire, like 4 classes. That was it. And I went all different places. So nobody really ever hired me again. You know, I just came and did it once. And I enjoyed developing those. It was very fun to go into at the end of the day to see like what everybody had developed, you know, how the same project could manifest itself into so many different variations with the fabrics people were using. I'm very into like fabric selecting. And if you watch my videos now, that's a huge part of what I do because it's a stumbling block for a lot of people. So it was really fun to be able to show them ways to use their fabric and maybe differently than they had and branch out from what they were doing. You know, teaching is not something I was trained to do. I was not a trained teacher. But apparently I've found a niche way of presenting that people enjoyed and got a lot out of. And I have sort of brought that now onto my YouTube videos. So the videos are a teaching, but not in the sense of like a classroom. It's more like, this is what I did today. This is what I'm, you know, this is the kind of projects we're working on. Here are different things going on. And so I still have that interaction with people via the videos and then going into the community to see what they produce. So we work a lot of things together.
You mentioned the part of your teaching when you were on the road was you often gave talks and then taught a class. What was your favorite thing to talk about when you did those talks?
I only had one talk.
Oh, was it? And what was
it's the same one. So that was my favorite.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. I did it well.
And that was sort of your story, Pat Sloan Quilter.
Yeah, it was my story. And it would change as the years went by because different things, you know, like let's say before I went to China with a group, I didn't talk about going to China. But after I went to China with a group of quilters, then part of my talk had a little bit about that trip and some funny things that happened. You know, that kind of a stuff. So, you know, it would change over time, but the base of how I started didn't change. And then the end part would, you know, rotate with what was new.
Right. Okay. I want to talk about, it's funny. Obviously you are an amazing quilt maker and you actually had an exhibit of your quilts at the Virginia Quilt Museum, which is a really big deal. And I'd love for you to talk about why that was important for you personally, and what value do you see in this kind of exhibit, sort of a one woman show, a large array of quilts? And then finally, what makes a quilt exhibit worthy? Why did you, I'd be curious, why did you choose the quilts that you chose for that exhibit?
It was such an amazing honor. I was shocked. I'm like, my quilts are not museum worthy. It's like, you don't want to look close.
Not true.
Oh, it was so, but when they contacted me, they wanted to feature, you know, Virginia quilt makers. And so, and that I'm not born in Virginia, but I've been here, you know, almost 40 years, and I learned to quilt in Virginia. So I'm a Virginia quilt maker. Yeah. And it was very interesting. I worked with not only the curator, but I also worked with Paula Golden, which many of you may know, who was on the board, and she was kind of like my mentor for this. And so we came up with a theme, which for me often is easier if I'm sort of telling either my history or just some sort of specific story. And we decided the best thing to do would be kind of tell my history using two quilts at a time that sort of mirrored each other, like, or partnered together, like that they were similar in some way. And that was, that gave me a focus for pulling the quilts together, because it was my job to decide all the quilts that would be shown. They left that up to me. So I went through and, you know, with this focus, it was wonderful then to, I had two rooms, which was extraordinary. I was able to hang big quilts and small quilts. And, you know, the Virginia Quilt Museum is in an old pre-Civil War home. So, you know, it is a specific layout for a museum. And then you had a question there about why is it important for museums to show people's one person's work? And I think that that is very, very important, because when you see one person's work and you get to maybe see a span, you can see how somebody's developed and changed. And it is kind of, it is inspiring. It can be eye-opening. It can also let somebody say, you know, hey, I can do this. You know, I've wanted to do this type of thing. And there I can see they did quilts like me here. And then later on, they did this kind of quilt I'd like to do. Mm-hmm. So it, there's a progression, and it lets people understand that you aren't born just doing this. You know, you get there via your life experiences and your work that you do.
Were there any quilts you put on exhibit where you're like, wow, like talking about sort of going over the span of your quilting career? Like, I think of my early quilts, I'm like, those are not seeing the light of day. But were there any you felt like, all right, this is early and I feel a little vulnerable about showing it, but for the reason you just discussed, showing, were there any where you're like, I'm not sure about this, but I'm going to put it on the wall?
And there's probably one I was thought was kind of boring, you know, it's it. Yeah. Cause I mean, it was an early quilt, and, but I put it there. Yeah. So I have been in the public for so long. Those things don't bother me, you know, like I don't feel, you know, too.
Right. Right.
Like, well, you wanted to see it. So here it is. You asked.
Well, when have you gone to similar exhibits of other people's work? Or certainly, I'm sure you've gone to a lot of quilt shows. So, you know, the question, what makes a quilt exhibit worthy or show worthy? What are you looking for when you look at other people's quilts? What really speaks to you?
Exhibit worthy being a quilt show or exhibit worthy being a museum. For me, they're kind of two different things. Yeah,
two different things.
Yeah. But, you know, but like, let's say if I'm going into a museum to look at quilts, which I've not had as much opportunity because there's probably not, you know, not as many museums I've gotten to that have quilts hanging, and they're often just older quilts, you know, which are great because I love old quilts, but I sort of enjoy seeing newer quilts too. And so I'm hit by design. That's, you know, no matter whether I'm at the regular quilt show, I'm at the guild meeting, or I'm in a museum, it's all going to be the design. You know, what is the design? What is it that sort of grabs my eye? You know, it might be a color combination as well. And so I'm not a workmanship person. I'm not in there looking for workmanship. I'm not in there looking to see how much detail there is. I'm looking for overall design impact and color combinations. And those are what the things are that speak to me about a quilt.
Let's move on, because I want to talk about something that I think is really important to you, and that is creating community. And you have created some very large quilting communities. Why is that important? Why are you so successful at that? What are quilters seeking when they look for community?
Yeah. I started my first community probably in about 1998. I joined one. I didn't start it till a little bit later, but I joined one, and I was on the internet looking for friends, pretty much. You know, I was like, where are the other quilters? I can't be the only one out here in 1998, you know, where are the other five of you? So, you know, I found that when I could, I guess I'm a geek, you know, I'm a techie, I'm a geek. And I find the internet is such a powerful tool for so many things, so many wonderful things, that you can find friends anytime, day or night. And when you have a community place, you can get in on a conversation that might be going on because it's still sitting there and it's still being active, even though it may have started the day before. You don't feel left out because you missed the meeting or whatever. There's always something happening in the community. Friendships. I have so many friends that are just been friends I've met through the internet that I've rarely even seen in person, if at all. I feel like when I built the communities, that is my, if lack for a better term, is my guild. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a place for people to come, for quilters to come and show or talk about their passions, ask questions, get help, share trials, tribulations, whatever, successes, triumphs. Yes, I won the Bobbin War. You know, it's like any little thing that is wonderful and fun. And why am I successful at it? Maybe because I just keep at it. I don't know. I mean, it's hard. I have no idea. But I love it and I'm engaged in it. I don't just build it and go check on it once a day.
Right.
I am there all day long, mm-hmm. morning till I go to bed. I will go in and look. And this is just how my life has been for, a lot of years. It's, mm-hmm. it's part of who I am and what I do. And so I'm, I think being engaged with your community is what makes it successful.
And given the success of your communities, it's interesting to me because we're recording this interview in 2022. We've come through a rough couple years with COVID, but also in terms of we're here in the US and we know what the political situation is. We know that people are having a harder and harder time creating community across political lines. But I know as someone is in the quilt community as well, there are people from all parts of the political spectrum, all parts of, you know, all the spectrums, quite frankly. What are you doing that, what's happening in your community that keeps it cohesive as opposed to embattled, embittered, what have you?
Right, right. It's very important. When you run a community, you have to have guidelines and you have to stick to them and be consistent. And this is massively important. My community is about quilts, number one. Mm-hmm. And the other stuff, if it comes in there, it just gets deleted. We don't allow it. So you keep the community on topic all the time. Mm-hmm. And then that is when, and I don't have any problem with that. The community doesn't have any problem with that. That's how you keep an environment like mine. You know, there are other communities. I'm talking about a quilt community that I run, but there are other communities that, having detailed discussions on what's going on in the world are part of that community. So therefore they would have different guidelines and different rules. But my guidelines are, we are talking about quilting. You leave the other stuff at the door and it comes in a little bit, but not to any big extent. Because I'm a worldwide community. You know, right now there's a war in Ukraine. I have Ukrainian quilters in my group.
Right.
And it's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, that's another thing I want to talk about because, you know, when in our discussion before the interview, I was like, you know, talk about quilts in American, you know, society or whatever. And you're just like, we're bigger, you know, and I think, you know, that it's not just for you. It's your audience is not just American. It is global. Right. And that is important to you. And And obviously that's something that the internet allows for, but I feel like even before the internet or even alongside the internet, you have traveled globally. I would love for you to talk about your life as a global quilter, your understanding of, is there a global quilting community? And I also do want to get back to the subject of Ukraine, but yeah. the global yeah. quilt community.
Yeah, I think that, and what happens is, what I have experienced is to say, what I've experienced is that quilters have a quilt language. I always say that you don't need to speak another language if you're a quilter. You can go and see a quilter, pull up your phone, show them what you just made, and you're instant friends. You know, it is the language. Quilting is our language. And so being international, everybody can participate there. My community is on Facebook, and so it has translation right on the written post. You can hit the translate, so somebody can actually write in their native language, and then everybody else in the community can hit translate. So there's no language barrier really anymore for that, because of the translations online are so good that you don't really, you know, have to worry too much. So I just feel like there are quilt makers everywhere doing amazing work. And I want us all to be able to see each other's work, celebrate each other across the whole world. So that's why I want it to be very, very global wherever I am for quilting.
And I would love it. I know I believe you've taken a group of quilters to China.
I did. Yeah. To China and to Ireland. A few years back.
I would love to hear about the trip to China, if there were any interesting stories that came out of that, because that to me, there's a very strong sort of a U.S.-Japan quilting connection.
Right, right, right.
China is what was that like, and what was that trip like for you?
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was through McCall's magazine, and then they use a travel agency. It was really a trip to China with quilters, so it was kind of like-minded people traveling. And so we did not meet any Chinese quilters, but we did see textiles being done. We saw silk being made. We went to fabric stores, of course, where I proceeded to purchase Laura Birch fabric, which I didn't know was Laura Birch fabric because, oops, that was crazy. But it was all about, I did some teaching of the quilt makers that we brought with us on the tour, but there were really isn't a strong history of quilt making in China, and not that we had any access to at the time that happened, that event, which was about 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. Then Ireland was different because there are Irish quilters, and I was able to in advance get hold of two guilds. So we met an Irish guild in Killarney and an Irish guild in Dublin, and just a small group of them, not like a whole, we had a little subset of them came, and the one did a little quilt show. They brought quilts, and there was a best of show quilt that had come in from an exhibit in Europe that they had done. So we got to see that best of show quilt. And so that was all very, very exciting. We also learned that in Ireland, there were just not a lot of quilt shops. There are quilters there, but there's just not a lot of shops. So,
well, I want to talk, again, we're talking in March, 2022, and you are doing a fundraiser for Ukraine. I would love to hear more about that, why you decided to do that, how you're doing it, the kind of response that you've gotten, and if you feel like the response is typical of the quilting community.
Yeah. When Ukraine was invaded, I mean, like everybody else, I mean, shock and just disbelief and wanting to do something, but not really sure what to do. So I have never really run a fundraiser. So I decided I would do a fundraiser to let people have a place that they could support if they didn't know who to support. Because I didn't know. So I did some research with my friends at Orofil Thread, who are an Italian company, and they do a lot of work with different organizations. So I asked their advice, and we decided on UNICEF. Mm-hmm. And we selected UNICEF because they also, the UNICEF that we're going through is the Australian branch, because they had a control panel that we could show all the money that is being raised is going for the Ukraine effort. So it's not just going into the general pot, and we can track it. And as of when we're speaking, we've probably hit 200,000 in donations so far, which is mind
that
blowing.
Does that surprise you? Or do you
yes. think that's so much? I had no idea. I mean, yeah. I had no idea, but I'm thrilled and honored and humbled by quilt makers around the world who we've had 21 countries donate. They're able to tell us that. So it's just been a huge outpouring. I also designed a quilt block that people could make and hang in their home, like hang on their door so they could remind themselves. And then today I kicked off a quilt drive because quilters want to make a quilt and send it. And I found two organizations that I have vetted and have contacted, and they know that I am going to promote them. This where people can send quilts. So
that's wonderful. I'm so happy that you're doing that. As we talked about, when a trusted figure does a fundraiser like this, you're like, okay, it's Pat. I trust Pat. Yeah, it's such a great way to raise money.
That's stressful. A little bit, you know, like I have to do this research. I had to do all this research. I'm like, oh, I hope this is okay. That's
well, it sounds like it's worked out. And obviously it's great that you're working with Aurifil, that you've got a partner in this.
Right. It's whenever you do something you're not, you know, that's new for you, that is, could, you know, involves money. That's like, I want to be sure I talk with somebody who has been there and can give some advice. And so they're great friends. They've been my friends for many, many years. So.
Yeah, it's a great company. Pat, it's been amazing to talk to you. You are one of my favorite quilting people. And I know that everyone's going to be so excited to hear this and hear what you have to say. I want to close this out by asking you, what's your favorite part of being Pat Sloan and being Pat and doing what you do? What gives you the most joy?
I think probably it is just being able to communicate with people. I mean, and talk quilts. I like to talk quilts. <It's> like,
yes, you do.
I do. I like quilts. I like to see them. I like to make them. I like to talk about them. I like to share about them. And I think that's why I like the community part of it, because I'm not a solo quilt maker who, like, someday you'd find out she made 500 pieces and nobody knew. You know, I'd be like, oh no, everybody knows I made this one. To be sure, you know.
Well, that's wonderful. Is there anything that you wish I'd asked you? Is there anything else you want to say about, again, being Pat Sloan, about your life as a quilter?
Well, I just hope that if all of you do watch YouTube, I do a video 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. I do a daily video, and it's kind of the life of a quilter, you know, what I'm making, what we're making as a community, things that are going on. I give tips, I give challenges. And so they're not very long. They're about 15 to 20 minutes, and you can, you know, watch them while you're sewing or, you know, cooking or something, you know, I mean, you can watch them at any time. So I hope you join me.
And where, if we want to join you on Facebook, do we just,
It's Quilt Along with Pat Sloan. So it's a group. Yeah.
Great. Well, great. Well, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. It's always so much fun to talk with you and to talk quilts, and you've just been such an important part of this community for so long. It's really an honor to have you do a QSOS interview here with us at the Quilt Alliance. So thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Thanks. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.